Welcome to Day Zero Update for March 15th, 2026. I'm your host, Chris Sologi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Jenna Victory.
And yeah, we've got a bunch of news this week. It was GDC week last week, and there were some other things going on as well, so a bunch of stuff got announced and release dates and all that kind of fun stuff. So we'll have a bunch of that stuff here, as well as a bunch of industry news. And luckily, most of this isn't. That's the win for this week. We'll see how things go in the future, but at least the Ides of March are going well for us today. But we'll talk about what we've been playing before we get to the news, and I'll kick it off here. I've been playing some MLB The Show 26 this weekend, playing the deluxe edition, so I get to play it on Friday instead of waiting until Monday or Tuesday. And yeah, they've done a good bit of work improving a number of things here. They've changed up the most of the interface for the Diamond Dynasty mode, which is their, you know, Ultimate Team mode. Mostly good on there. There's a few things that I'm like, who the fuck approved this? So like when you go to submit cards for collections, you could also sell duplicates from that screen, but you can no longer do that here. If you have not submitted the card and locked it in, you can sell from there, but otherwise you can't get to that screen, and that just seems real dumb. So if I get duplicates, I have to go back to the screen where you look at all of your players, essentially like your card binder, essentially, and do it through there, which is not the way I would go, but they've done that. They made it easier to submit cards. And they show you on the different categories, like, oh, you've got stuff here to submit, and all that, which is nice. They even let you in the live series, which are all the active player cards. They let you even submit all the cards in the way they have them set up is like a playoff bracket kind of situation, where each of the divisions on the AL and NL on different sides of the screen, and you can see like all the cards that you can submit for the entire division's worth, so five teams worth of cards. You can lock them to not submit them if you want, which I don't know why you would want to block that, but otherwise you can do all that there. So if you have a bunch of stuff, you don't necessarily have to do them individually or even go into the team, each team's list for that stuff. Though the one knock there is that in the individual teams list, you don't have the sidebar that shows you the things you get for hitting different milestones of players submitted for each team. It's at the top of the screen, so when you're down, you know, looking through the cards, it does can easily lose track of where you're at on that list. So there's some downsides, but also the nice thing is that they don't reset your place on the page every time. So if you were like submitting cards in previous years, you submit one card, it would reset you back to the top of the list, and you'd have to scroll all the way back down, which would be more annoying on things like the uniform list for those things where, you know, you're submitting minor league teams. Where there'd be like 200 cards, and so you'd be at the top and have go all the way to the bottom and find, you know, ones to submit there, and you'd have to keep getting bumped back up to the top and then scroll back down again, which would be very annoying, and they've fixed that here. So it just returns you back to where, you know, the card you were highlighting before, which is great. That's also fucked with my muscle memory, because I would just instinctively, after backing out, would hold down. And then I would realize I'm like already at the bottom. I was like, oh, I don't have to do that anymore. It was a nice thing there. I still have some issues when you're looking at programs. Like if you do, the programs are sort of the essentially like little mini battle passes, I guess you could call them. They're just essentially like a progression of cards and XP and other bonuses you get for various themed things they put out. Like a lot of them right now are World Baseball Classic stuff you can get. I think there's five different categories for that. Just to have more player cards you can get out of it. And so if you do, they have moments, they have like stat ones for using specific cards that you get from the those programs, and others that are just like use the players and earn XP from them, and you get, you know, progression there. In previous years, it would always back you out if you did a moment and then come back. It would never like put you back in that part of the menu, and it still doesn't. So I feel like for the way they're improving on playability things in some parts of Diamond Dynasty, others are still suffering. There's issues like that I would like to see improved. But yeah, they have like more categories to see. The cards that have gotten, you know, improvements, you know, player XP is what they call them, PXP, for using them in games, and based on the stats you get out of it, so you get certain amounts of XP out of it to improve the card in every level you get, which is up to five levels, I believe. The card gets better, and they've added a new thing called mods to this so that you can improve certain stats based on how you want it by completing, you know, objectives, which the first one's always XP based, and then the tiers above are based on stats you do with that card. So that's the thing they've done, and they've also added new level of card to this. Mostly the diamond was sort of the top tier of cards, which would be like ratings 85 and up on the overall ratings for these players. Now they've added that the 95 and up is red diamond. They're just adding like a new thing to differentiate the top tier cards versus the rest that are still very good cards and probably the ones you want in your lineups. Otherwise, there's not really too much else they've done for Diamond Dynasty. Yeah, it's no real new like modes or anything in there. Mostly like UI stuff that is good to have. Let's see, I've been mostly playing a Road to the Show. That the nice thing to do for a Road to the Show and franchise, since they allow you to create, you know, women characters in these games the last couple years, now they finally added the ability to have women sort of fill out rosters throughout the league. Which for the start would be in, you know, the minor league teams. You'll start seeing some women in there, which didn't really make sense the last 2 years to have like, oh, here's the first two women that, you know, get drafted into the major league system, and those were the only two that would ever show up. So now that that's they had that option so that those kind of start showing up, and I made my first player, a pitcher, which is Peggy Hill from King of the Hill, as a pitcher, and she. The nice thing they've added, I want to say, 11 more teams to the college ranks that you can get recruited to. So I think it's 19 total now, up from 8 last year. So when you start a new character, you get a little dialogue where you get to. They're like, oh, this is the dream team I want to get recruited to. But you can sign with any if you want. And you can also say they're like, I don't, you know, I don't care who I get drafted to in the majors, or I want to get drafted to a specific team. And I believe before you do go to the draft, you can get you can probably say, oh, I don't care, or I still want to get drafted by that team. But for this one, I just let whoever. Which initially, coming out of high school, I got drafted by the St. Louis Cardinals, and I was like, they suck, so I don't want to. I'm going to go to college. Went to Texas and got drafted again. You get a chance before your junior year to go get drafted, and I did that and got drafted by the Washington Nationals, who probably even worse. And I was like, ah, whatever. I'll just move on to that. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. I'm in May, I think middle of May or late May, a good bit into the season, and it's definitely a bit more challenging than I would say last year's was. I'm not striking out players as easily as before. I would say, like, in the past few years, like, you can, if you're good at the pitching mechanics, you can just start destroying people pretty quickly, even though your stats are not very good. And now it seems like they've improved that part of it to kind of make it a bit more of a challenge. Where I've gone through like an entire month without getting a win. Not because I'm losing, but more either not going the distance on the. I think you have to get at least for what they're doing here, like get at least 5 innings to qualify for the win. I'm either getting pulled out after 4 innings because there's. It seems like they've got like a hard pitch count that they want you to stick to. So some games I get pulled out early, sometimes I don't. It's mostly like the bullpen not keeping leads or things like that. So that's kind of the only issue. But the new thing they've done here is that there are more goals. Kind of add more goals of, get 3 wins in a month or hit this many strikeouts in a month or this level of ERA or WHIP or whatever stats for that stuff. Like I just got into the top 100 prospects list, and so it's like become your team's top rated prospect is one of the goals, and more stuff like that to work on. The one that persists is one that's like you need to get to 65 overall rating, which I'm at 60 or 61, I forget. I still got a ways to go on that, but much like in previous years, you would have stats you can upgrade as you get tokens, and you get tokens for completing based on how well you're pitching, and also getting like dynamic challenges in the game, where they give you like an option of like, oh, what do you want to do for this inning? And it's like, oh, I'll strike out everybody, strike out the side, or I'll just give up no runs, but strike out two people, or I'll just make sure there's no runs and get out of the inning in less than 15 pitches, kind of stuff for different amounts of rewards and all that kind of stuff. And you run into like really good players that they call boss challenges that will give you similar like how do you want to handle this player and like what kind of which is nice. The new thing they've added this year, which is in place in the major leagues, is the ABS system, which is the automatic balls and strikes system. Essentially, you can challenge any pitch location that's called by the ump, and if it's and it does like an almost instant review of it that shows like, oh, this did hit the like corner of the box, so it's a strike, or you miss it and it's a fail. And if you get it right, you get to keep the two challenges you've got. If you fail, you lose one of them. So it's kind of got a limited mechanic there. So that's pretty cool to see. I've had some games where I got like four or five of them right. But in response to that system, they pull the batter's box UI off the screen as you're pitching, so that you don't have it up to be like, oh, I definitely hit that, but they called a ball. It's like give you a little bit of guesswork there for that. And you have like a few seconds to call for the challenge. But it does result in a fun little mechanic or animation where you see the pitcher or the batter tapping their head a couple times. You're like, hey, I'm challenging this kind of thing. So that's a nice new mechanic for the game. But yeah, that's kind of largely what's there for Road of the Show. Oh yeah, the other nice thing is the side character you had in the previous two games when you played as a woman, was a woman named Mia Lewis. And here she shows up again, but she's not like another player trying to get into the league. Like the last 2 years, she is retired and become like an agent for other women players. So you kind of, she kind of recruits you early on in high school and is like guiding you through the draft process and college process and all that. So that's like a nice little story evolution there for her. They also let you enter in the name for, player you had in one of the previous games. to have them be also like a legend that gets mentioned but never shows up. Which last year I also did Peggy Hill, so I was like, I just put Lara Croft because I was like, whatever, it doesn't really matter. But then they just occasionally just talk about Lara Croft, and I'm just like, all right, this is pretty funny. So yeah, franchise mode I don't think has changed too much for major things. Like a lot of it's in like off-season stuff for like negotiating player, free agent contracts and such, all of that kind of stuff. So I haven't really gotten to any of that just yet. They've also kind of added a little bit, I think, to the simulation system, but it seems largely the same as last year's, where you can say like, hey, I don't want to play, all 9 innings of every game. Just let me come in for, the latter half of the games or whatever. For that, you can kind of fine tune some of that stuff. But like road of the show, you can also have women prospects start showing up in the minors, so that's pretty cool. But yeah, that's pretty much what I have to say about MLB The Show 26 so far. Enjoying it a lot. Definitely seems like a pretty good improvement over last year's game without really changing anything that didn't need changing. So there's that. Let's see. I just finished my review for Blossom, the Seed of Life. That should be going up at some point here. I gave it a 4 out of 5 because I really enjoyed it, but I figured out the issue I was having last week, which was that the machine that generates the animals ran out of fuel for it, and I didn't realize that at a certain point. So it made it more, much harder than it was supposed to be. I ended up reloading an older save and kind of redoing that whole process, which worked out fine once I let it go. But as I say in my review, kind of the latter half of the game is kind of just a tedious experience, because you're just, or at least I was, just sitting around feeding these machines, fuel or whatever, and just watching bars go up instead of really doing anything. Any like real building or anything, for the most part, is just the pace you have throughout the first part of the game is kind of much quicker and much more like spinning plates, but just keeping these things going and checking on everything and making sure everything's working right as you're progressing through the game. Kind of once you start getting to the end game part of it, you kind of end up with a bit of tunnel vision, mostly by design for the way the game's designed, as you kind of no longer have real, all your systems should be sustainable and no longer need you to check up on them too much. So at that point, you're just kind of watching these bars fill up, and it's a little less exciting of a way to progress the crafting part of this game. But yeah, it also still looks silly with the rest of the animals running around, where I'd have, pigs and tigers and elephants running around. They just run around haphazardly, so sometimes they would just I had a screenshot of a pig standing on a wall because it didn't know what to do. Or seeing like a tiger like running around in circles because all it needs to do is just move around. That kind of stuff. But really enjoyed it. It's still really fun, 30 hours. It's just the latter portion of the game, because it's not, a sandbox one of these that just kind of keeps going forever. It doesn't really have a ton for you to do besides just work towards the end in the last like 10 hours of the game. But other than that, there's really nothing really all that negative I have to say about it. It's like $17, so it's a pretty reasonable price for the amount of game you're getting there, and they seem to be updating the game to add at least like rework some things. So like they reworked the storage system in the game for like storing, excess materials and all that, which was definitely an issue I had. Essentially, like you have this little like shelf that has 6 slots that you walk up to it and hopefully highlight the slot that you want to put something in, and hopefully it highlights the thing on your backpack that you want to put in there. Otherwise, you have to hit some buttons to scroll through the things on your backpack to organize things correctly. Now I think it brings us up like a do that more directly instead of moving your character around to highlight the right things, which at the point I was at in the later portion of the game meant I was just throwing shit on the ground because I didn't want to deal with putting things that aren't important in, organized places. And then they added a recycling machine, which is definitely a thing I needed because I had a bunch of shit that I had made for different machines, and when you break down a machine, it just gives you those crafted items that makes it, and you have no way to break it down. So if it's not something that gets used for a later recipe, it's basically useless at a certain point. So I literally just have a bunch of trash on the ground that I didn't need anymore. And so yeah, it seems like they are reworking some of that stuff to make it work better, but I didn't play through the game with any of this stuff, so I didn't really improve my score much based on the things that they've added after I played it. I just put a note that they've improved a few things that I had issues with, so if that's better for the people that are playing it, after long. But yeah, like that a lot. It's a really nice kind of linear survival crafting game. And then the last game I have here is Hell Is Us. This is a game that came out last year, I think. It is from Nacon and a developer called Rogue Factor. And it's kind of a really interesting action adventure kind of game. So you are somebody who's from this weird land that is sort of off limits, I guess. I'm still learning sort of the story stuff, but you're from this area called, I think it's like Hadia, something like that. And you left when you were younger, but have sort of snuck back in after there's this war that's going on. There's like a civil war going on. You've sort of snuck your way back in to try to find out, some things that, you've got going. You got mysteries, and like it really has some interesting ways of dealing with this like investigational stuff that is going on. And yeah, it's kind of presented almost like a mystery board of like red string connecting things, all that kind of stuff. You talk to people and you kind of get data points that get added to this thing in your pause menu. And as you learn more, it kind of adds more details and all that kind of stuff. And eventually, as you're getting, notes and talking to people and learning more about things that are going on, you start solving some of these mysteries. And along the way, there's like combat to this. And it's kind of a little bit action game, but also a little bit Souls to it. I've not died yet in this, I've only played a couple hours. But you run into these weird, like blank enemies that are kind of look like, yeah, like a big play humanoid kind of looking guy, like real gray, but they have like a big hole in their face. And as you're fighting them, you're killing a bunch of them. Some of them have like this weird like red aura that comes out of them that you also have to fight. So it's kind of an additional like enemy thing to worry about. Where I'm at, I have like two different weapons. I have a sword and have like a dual dagger kind of weapon that I can fight with, and I can swap between them, and the weapons level up. You don't level up as far as I've seen so far. But yeah, I'm not super into the combat yet, but it does have options for making the combat easier if you don't want that to be the focus of the game for you. It's like I like the investigation, exploration kind of stuff. Where I might have come back, to, I don't know if it's his hometown or somewhere nearby, but find a guy who's like, oh yeah, you're not gonna be able to get there by foot. You need to find a vehicle. And it was like, oh, the soldiers here had an APC nearby. It's like you need to go through the woods here. And I set up these chimes for my kids that always got lost, and so you follow the chimes going through the woods to know that you're going the right way. And you eventually happen upon where the soldiers were and find one who's like nearly dead. And you help get a med kit for him. And he gives you the key to get into this like underground bunkers that I guess the rest of his team was in. But the way you kind of figured out how to open the doors, you had to go like up these ladders and find this little like ruin that has a puzzle in it that I happened to just randomly solve without noticing that there was a sign nearby that tells you like it's like three symbols you need to fill out on this thing, and has a sign that tells you two, and you if you look around, you find a third piece that fell off at some point. And I just happened to find the two and guess the rest, and that ended up working. That opens up the door. When you do that, and you kind of work your way down and start fighting some enemies, and there's safe stuff going on. There's no real bonfire system for the enemies or the for the combat stuff. So, but it's like save points you run into that are the thing there. But yeah, it's real weird to describe, but it's got some neat ideas to it. So I've been enjoying this, and I got it on sale for about half off, like for actually about $20, Green Man Gaming on Steam. So, but this is also on PlayStation, Xbox, and it's got some real neat stuff going on there. So, definitely recommend checking it out. Whenever it's on sale, at least, it sounds neat. But yeah, that's been pretty much what I've been playing. So, how about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I'm still playing Splatoon 3. I've got the I've sort of gone and sort of started focusing on the Grizzco type stuff because there's currently there's like this thing going on called the Big Run that I think ends later on tonight, where basically the Salminids are like bursting in the city, and so it's your job to go out and get them, and you get like double the amount of points and stuff while doing it. And essentially, after having like played the Side Order DLC, I kind of figured out like a lot of Side Order's like major mechanics kind of get its stuff from the Grizzco stuff. Because a lot of the like enemy types are the same, a lot of the ways that the enemies manifest are the same. It's pretty obvious where they get a lot of the where the guts of a lot of that DLC come from. And it's also kind of funny to play because I played, I've already played the campaign for the for Splatoon 3, and spoiler alert. The guy who's the head of Grizzco kind of ends up dying at the end of that, so I have no idea who it is I'm actually talking to right now. But yeah, it's still a lot of fun. I'm getting, still getting progressively better at it. And honestly, I'm kind of excited for that spin-off game that's supposed to be coming out not too far away from now. But the other game I'm playing, and I'm actually getting pretty close to finishing it, is Mio: Memories in Orbit. I'm actually are about halfway right through writing my review for it. And as I've gotten further into this game, I will say, like, I've mentioned before, like, how this game kind of has a bit of a high learning curve starting out because you don't really have access to like an overworld map and stuff like that. You're not, it's kind of hard to figure out where you are and where you need to go. Eventually, you do get that map, an overworld map to use, but you have to like either give a bunch of like currency that you're collecting through the game to this character that you meet fairly early on, or you have to die several times and end up getting all of that currency going to them anyway, then it'll eventually give you the ability to get an overmap world. But the thing is, the overmap, it only updates when you go to any of the like the save points or checkpoints in the world itself. So there's that. I will say though, here's this thing, if you're not like a hardcore platformer player, this game is really difficult after you get past the midway point, because it gets to a point where like there is a lot of really precise platforming that is needed to get across some of these honestly really intricate courses. And You're gonna die a few times trying to figure out like the whole sort of layout of some of these because they are not immediately obvious. And there's a lot of like having to, because much like what happens with a lot of Souls-like type games, you've got a stamina meter. The stamina meter doesn't really work with like your regular basic actions. It only operates depending on like the more special functions, like gliding or using your prehensile hair to like crawl up walls, stuff like that. And it sort of either disappears outright or it's slowly drained. And it's just it gets really difficult towards the end. That's but like I said, I'm still got a little bit ways to go, and I still have the rest of my review to finish writing. But honestly, despite whatever complaints I might have, it's a really solid Metroidvania. So not necessarily going to not recommend it, but I will recommend it with the caveat that you have to be prepared to realize that you're in for a challenge. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. So Danrib, what about you?
I just got back from GDC, so as far as like my main gaming, there hasn't really been that much to talk about. Although the last time I was on the show, the one game that I've gotten a whole lot of time in is Paranormasite: The Seven Mysteries of Honjo. This one was published by Square Enix a couple years ago for the Switch and I believe PC and mobile, and they recently came out with a sequel a week after the last Partner Direct, which surprised a lot of fans of the series. And yeah, I actually never knew about it. So when I saw it, I definitely had some interest. I just didn't know if I had the time to pour into it. I pitched the review for the sequel to the Smashpad staff and nobody bit. So I was like, all right, I'm gonna go ahead and try and take this on my own. So I went ahead and downloaded the first game, which was like $5 on the eShop. So I don't know if we're still at that price, but so far I would definitely recommend it. And yeah, if you're someone that enjoys, visual novel type games that really go into its meta, you'll definitely find something to enjoy here in Paranormasite. And the one thing that I wasn't fully prepared for, even though I probably should have been, is the fact that the game is actually scary. Games like Phoenix Wright, the Famicom Detective series, they do some things with audio to make you just be aware of your surroundings in certain ways. But Paranormasite actually does it in such a way where you're kind of afraid to go ahead and check to see what's behind you. And unlike a lot of what we see in modern day visual novels, you can die in this game. And like when you die, luckily it's forgiving to a point where it'll probably put you back to that point where you did die so you can figure things out. But there are definitely some interesting things in its meta, very similar to games like Doki Doki Literature Club, where it's like, oh, wow, this is pretty cool. Like, I don't want to delve too much into spoilers, even though it's a 2-year-old game at this point, but there was one point in the game where I was talking to this person who has a spirit that can like that can kill me as soon as I hear it, and you can't actually get through this this part in the game unless you actually go into the game settings and turn off the voice acting sound effects, and by doing that, you obviously can't hear what the spirit is saying. So as a result, you don't die, and they're like, "What? This had the ability to kill everybody." And yeah, it's pretty cool. The story revolves around like this like creepy folklore, and you use different characters throughout the game and just try to find your way through the timeline to eventually get to the end. And like, yeah, it's very well done. I haven't gotten to a point where I think that every decision you make matters to the path of things. As I think like everything has a correct answer, but I'm definitely enjoying this one so far. I don't know if I want to jump immediately into the second, despite us having a code for it, but at the same time, I'm really enjoying my time with it. So that's Paranormasite. I've also been playing Mr. Sleepy Man. This one came out early last week during GDC, so obviously I had some time to play it beforehand. And this one is different. It is a platformer adventure game. But it does things a little bit differently. In fact, like, it does things so differently. Like, I'm gonna have some trouble like describing what you do. So you use this guy who is like sleepwalking, and at the same time, it's like it's a platformer, so you have like full control of their various jumps and whatever you could do. But there's also a lot of trolling involved. So if you've played games like Untitled Goose Game, you know, where the whole idea is to just make everyone's lives suck by doing a whole bunch of like checklist things, Mr. Sleepy Man has the same sort of idea, but it also has a lot of like hidden checklist things that you can do. The first level actually revolves on your ability to just wreak enough havoc that the whole like city dies down. And there are more levels like that in the game, but I haven't gotten around to finishing them. We're gonna have a review up on the site later this week, done by Michael Fertitta. But yeah, he should be able to talk more about that one. That's about it for what I've been playing. But I'm gonna go ahead and like talk about GDC for a little bit. For those people that have really looked into the changes of GDC over the past couple years, it's been a bit of a controversial year for a bunch of reasons. One thing that they did was they sort of rebranded it. It's no longer called just the Game Developers Conference. Now it's called the GDC Festival of Gaming, which, you know, it kind of gives the convention like sort of a casual, you know, everyday feel. But at the same time, the cheapest convention badge was like $1,000, and that's like times three, times four of what it was the year before. Like, I actually used to donate the most basic badge to Amir Sattvaat's gaming community as a way to pay it forward for winning a contest a couple years ago when I was unemployed. And you know, I'm not saying it was easy, but $300 was way more affordable than $1,000. So unfortunately, I wasn't able to do that for this community this year. But at the same time, like, we're seeing all sorts of ripple effects having to do with both our political climate and how much things are. For example, you know, obviously we have a lot of like dumb stuff going on with ICE, especially here in California, since, you know, obviously we have a lot of people who have you know, migrated here, whether it be legally or illegally, and we've seen all sorts of racial profiling from the ICE agents, and obviously that's gotten people afraid to come here as a result. People have complained about the city of San Francisco regarding its safety as it relates to things like again, things like ICE, as well as those who are unhoused and whatever it may be. That being said, like, I haven't found the event to be any more or less dangerous than it has been in previous years. At the end of the day, like, you know, if you avoid danger, you're probably not gonna find it. But yeah, things do happen. As for like the actual vibes of the event, they just announced that 20,000 people went as opposed to 30,000 last year. So obviously that's a far drop from 10,000 people. But at the end of the day, like, I still enjoyed my time. I did actually jump into the expo floor on the last day I was there, and yeah, it was smaller. They actually booked a whole lot less space than we had in previous years, but with the extra space, they also had more events to do, or more space to do things like the awards that they do every year. They didn't have to get a separate building for that, so it was nice being able to see those. And then as for the games, I played 30 games. You know, I'm not going to preview every single one of them on the site. But, you know, there were definitely some that definitely were highlights of mine. My favorite of the show was Tire Boy. This was announced during the Day of the Devs showcase before the Game Awards last year. Or was it SGF? I don't remember. But either way, you play as this tire with arms and legs. And, you know, you can go ahead and walk around. You can go ahead and have some combat. If I were to compare this to anything, it would be a cross between Breath of the Wild and Sonic Frontiers, except, you know, Sonic Frontiers being good. And yeah, this game is just wild. Like, you know, you can run around as a tire, but if you want to go faster, you can just go ahead and roll. You also have this ridiculously high jump that you could do that makes Mario and Sonic just, you know, just put their heads down in shame. I played the game for about 15 minutes. It was a lot of fun, and I'll go ahead and preview it later this week. Another game that I really enjoyed was Bubsy 4D. It was there. I can't really talk about what I enjoyed yet, you know, because we have an embargoed preview coming up later this week. But yeah, that was there, and I'm looking forward to playing even more of it. That's all I'll say with that. And then another pretty fun one that I saw but did not play was My Arms Are Longer Now. This one is coming out hopefully this year. And basically, it looked like thank goodness you're here as far as the way its visual style is. I thought the comedy lended itself a little bit better. Those of you who remember my review of "Thank Goodness We're Here," you're here was I wasn't a big fan of that level of comedy, but this one looks like it's going to be more up my alley. Anyway, stay tuned to the site. We'll definitely have more stuff from GDC as we move forward. But those were definitely my highlights. Oh, I also do want to quickly talk about Avatar Legends, the fighting game coming out. We don't know if it's going to be this year or next year, but we had access to five characters. We had Avatar Aang, we had Korra, we had Katara, and then Zuko as well as Toph, and like each of them played awesomely. If I were to compare this to anything, it would be a cross between an Arxis fighting game and a good Marvel versus Capcom 3. And this one's already feeling quite polished, and I can't wait to see them unleash more characters. But yeah, that's been about it for me.
All right, so let's get to some news. And first up here, we got some subscription news as the PS Plus game catalog was announced for this month. They'll be going live here on the 17th, I believe. For the premium and extra tiers, first up here for PS5 is Warhammer 40,000 Space Marine, so you can check out the newest of the Space Marine games. That's supposed to be pretty good, so there you go for that. Also for PS5, Madden NFL 26. Those the we're in the off season of the NFL season, so you can check out that if you have not purchased it previously. So that's one you can look at. For PS5 and PS4, Persona 5 Royal, the ultimate version that has the big expansion added onto it. Then they also throw in here for PS4 Persona 5 Royal Ultimate Edition, which is Persona 5 and the Boreal DLC, the specific differences. For PS5 and PS4, there's Blasphemous 2, so you can get some more of a very depressing style of 2D action, Souls-like kind of thing. So if you think things are too positive in the world right now, this is a game you should check out. So there you go for that. For PS5, Metal Eden. This is a sci-fi FPS game, so if you want to shoot some stuff, that's one to check out. And then let's see. Okay, we got a couple more here for PS5. Lords of the Ring: Return to Moria. This is the kind of mining game, I think it is. So you're building a survival crafting, building, exploring the dwarves and all that. So that should be pretty good. And then for PS5 and PS4, Astroneer. As I was talking about Blossom, the Seed of Life, this is a game that game borrows heavily from, especially the backpack, kind of largely influenced by Astroneer's backpack, with a little less going on there, because like that Astroneer's backpack has like crafting stuff going on in it, but also the way that you have your little ship base and you're kind of building out, crafting different things to attach to it, with your cables and all that. And you're also in that one, you're not terraforming a planet, you're just tearing through the ground and collecting, elements and material and all that. And hopping between like a handful of different planets in that solar system to do the various things they have there. So I really like that game, has a really great style to it. So that's one to check out if you haven't done so. And that's it for extra. For just premium, the classic tier, they have Tekken Dark Resurrection, the ultimate version of that game. That is the PS3 version, just had like the movie and like some basic multiplayer stuff to do in there. And this one adds a bunch of single player content to it. It says here story battle, quick battle, arcade battle, practice, Tekken Dojo, Tekken Bowl, Gold Rush, and a bunch of other extra stuff in there. So that's the one to check out for some more Tekken stuff there. Yep, that's your lineup for this part of the month, and some neat stuff. So Brandon, anything there you're going to check out?
Definitely Space Marines 2, 'cause I loved the other one, and definitely want to do that again. Also, probably Metal Eden as well. Because I just because you know I like the look of it and I want to just give it a shot. I've heard that it plays well. I've heard so-so things about its writing, but whatever. So let me think. I've already played Blasphemous 2. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Obviously, I could always do Persona 5 Royal again, but I've played both that and the original version at this point, so.
How about you, Dinner?
There really isn't a whole much here for me either. I'm not a Warhammer guy, so I can easily ignore Space Marine. Blasphemous 2 looks nice, but I don't see myself putting much time into that one. That Lord of the Rings game is actually, I interviewed for that company, and I didn't get that job. Not playing that one either. And then Persona 5 Royal, I obviously already played that. Madden 26, it's pretty much a dry month. I will say Tekken Dark Resurrection is a game that I've never played before, so I might want to dabble in that, but it
So yeah, let's get to some other new outer coming out soon. First up here, the Switch 2 launch title, Bravely Default Flying Fairy HD, is getting released on other platforms that are not the PlayStation, as they came out in a bit of a surprise launch on the Xbox Series X and S and PC. Seems to be $40 for the game. Might be on sale for 20% off for the launch on Xbox and Steam. To check those out, and yeah, that's a solid way to play that.
And I still wanna I still I plan on playing it when I can, get the money scrounged together. But yeah, I definitely, 'cause I know this ver there's a version of this already available on Switch and Switch, well, Switch 2 at least. And I definitely want to give it a shot.
So yeah, there's that to check out. Let's see, and yeah, coming up here later this month on March 27th is Marvel Maximum Collection. We knew that was coming out at some point, weeks, but that is the Konami collection of various Marvel games that they put out on the arcades and NES. It's mainly highlighted by the X-Men, the arcade game. Probably most people, there are Spider-Man games on the Super Nintendo and Genesis, Captain America and the Avengers, and Silver Surfer, a few other games there. But yeah, it looks like it's going to be an interesting release here. We're going to be taking physical pre-orders, I believe, when it launches on digital. I assume maybe this summer or whenever that's ready. It's a collection you have to pre-order in a few weeks and then wait a while long. I don't think they have a date for that physical version. Yeah, there you go. Then we got, let's see, coming out not too long after that on April 7th is Sigma Star Saga DX. This is the sort of remastered version of the GBA kind of cult classic game that kind of mixes shoot 'em up stuff with like top-down Zelda action kind of stuff in there, as you're kind of switching back and forth. And are particularly like a human who's been brought into this situation where you're kind of taking on alien stuff. The plot is, but you're kind of becoming one of the aliens, infiltrate their empire and all that. I assume finding out that they're probably not as bad as your side thinks they are. And also finding out that your side is maybe not as righteous as you thought they were. And all that. But yeah, you're kind of going through a bunch of stuff there. Yeah, it was like a very ambitious game for its time on the GBA.
Definitely gonna keep an eye out for this one, 'cause this is like right up my alley.
Yeah, I remember when I first saw this game, when it came, was it Game Boy Advance that it originally came out on? I think it was a Nintendo Power where I saw like a review for it, but I couldn't find it in a store. So I never got to play it. So this might be a game I pick up physically and then like just put it away, assuming that it does come out physically. And yeah, I don't know if I'll have the time to jump into it, but I am definitely interested by what it.
Seems like for this version, they've improved the map, decreased random encounter rates, rebalanced the experience system, updated the scripts, and bugs from it. So, seems like some good stuff there. So yeah, there you go for that. It's on the PS5, Switch, and PC. on April 7th. So there's that. And yeah, another game we've talked about a bit, Aphelion. This is the new Don't Nod game. That looks like Space Uncharted a little bit. This finally has a date on April 28th. Yeah, PS5, Xbox, PC for that. I guess it'll also be on Game Pass if you have that for $30. It'll be or $30 on PC, $35 on console. So yeah, there's that. They also have a physical edition that'll be launching on PS5 in July. But yeah, this looks really neat. Every time I've seen video of this and whatnot, looks really interesting. So I'm curious to maybe get a chance to check it out. So yeah.
Yeah. It actually looks really good.
Yeah.
Honestly, you know, I've been wanting Don't Nod to do another action game. After, you know, the last two action games they put out were, the second one especially was pretty good, but it just did, sadly, did not get the attention I think it deserved. And the one before that, Vampyr, it was all right. But, yeah, I just, it looks good, and I'm glad they're doing an action game again.
Yeah, let me see here. Yeah, on Mario Day, Nintendo announced a date for Yoshi and the Mysterious Book, which will be May 21st. I believe this is Switch 2 exclusive. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is the newest of the Yoshi games, kind of going the direction of presenting everything in kind of the style of a storybook. This is a neat style. I don't know if this is going to be as interesting of a game to play, but this gets closer to launch. But yeah, that's one to keep an eye on. And then the last one here I have a story for is Sin Reloaded. That'll be out later this year. No date on it yet, but it's coming to everything: PS5, Xbox, PS4, Switch, and PC. This is a game that came out around the time of Half-Life, and it was very much the question of, oh, which one's going to be the one that sets the new standard for first-person shooters.
And we all know how that ended.
Yeah, some people were on the Sin side. Some people were on Half-Life and were on Half-Life side for that. Because I think, was Sin the one that was episodic?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, it was episodic.
Half-Life, episodes, yeah.
Yeah, Half-Life was pretty much an all-in-one thing.
I think this one ended up not doing that well, so they just kind of reworked it into a kind of thing. But yeah, that will be an interesting one to check out, as this is another night dive game. So yeah, that's one to keep an eye on. And yeah, anything there that you're looking forward to of these dated games?
Well, like I said, Sigma Star Saga DX, definitely something I'm going to be looking on, because that looks right up my alley, and I am shocked I did not hear about it back when it originally released. Aphelion, also probably something I'm going to definitely look into, because I still like Don't Nod a lot, and I think game looks worth trying at least once. Yoshi and the Mysterious Book will probably be something I look into later on, too, because, you know, it's another Yoshi game. Sin Reloaded, I already played Sin back in the day. I don't need to play it again.
How about you, Nero?
Yeah, these all look awesome in different ways. I've already played the Bravely Default Flying Fairy remake on Switch 2, so I'm not really trying to get it anywhere else. Marvel Maximum Collection is definitely something I have my eyes on. Adriana went to an appointment at GDC to play it, and I think they're showing PAX East, though we'll probably get code before then, so I don't know if that's going to be Phil reviewing that, but I'm looking forward to hearing what we hear. I already mentioned what we'll do about Sigma Star Saga. Aphelion is not really my thing. Don't Nod really hasn't really hit the ball at the park for me in regards to their non-narrative exploration games. And Yoshi looks cool, too. That's just typically not a game that I usually spend full price on, so we'll see.
So yeah, let's get to games that were announced. Got one here, The Ninth Dragon, which is a really interesting voxel base game set in 1980s Kowloon. Looks really interesting from the trailer I've seen, for the way that it works. Yeah, it's kind of a beat 'em up sort of thing where you're taking down gang members and such. So yeah, it looks really interesting. So that's one keep an eye on. I the date for this one, but it's coming to PS5, Xbox, Switch, and PC at some point, but that one looks really neat. There's Hoa 2. This is a game I played last year or the year before. It's a really fun kind of 3D puzzle platformer kind of thing. Seemed to do well enough that they're making a sequel. PS5, Xbox, Switch 2, and PC. Sometimes it looks like that a pretty interesting game. Seems like they're doing some more E stuff in this, so that looks interesting. Because the first one was kind of just a 2D game, so there's that. And then yeah, this interesting game called Yerba Buena, which seemed hilarious with all the controversy around the Yerba Buena gardens outside of GDC that was going on. But this is set in 1970 San Francisco as a sort of first-person puzzle platform kind of game that looks really interesting and has kind of a mechanic that they call like copy and paste. Yeah, copy and paste mechanic lets you apply the movement and physical traits of objects to manipulate the game world, which seems really neat. And yeah, this has kind of a really art style that you would guess from is being set in like a 70s San Francisco. It looks really nice. So yeah, that one. Well, this does have a date, May 26th. So that one's for that. Yeah, the last one here is Falcom announcing that they have for their 45th anniversary, they're going to be working on a new Dragon Slayer game that they're just calling Dragon Slayer Project. Which was one of their earliest games they made.
Yeah, actually, I believe that it's actually the very first Legend of Heroes title that they released way before, the Trails stuff started.
That's the what they say here, the sixth entry in the series is Dragon
Yeah.
Slayer, The Legend of Heroes.
Like I said.
Other titles called Xanadu, Romancia, Legacy of the Wizard, Sorcerian are also part of the Dragon Slayer series. But yeah, that's one of their sort of formative series. No real details on any of this, though I believe the guy who created the Dragon Slayer series for them is no longer, I forget, either he's hard retired or he's dead. I forget. I saw people talking about this, be like, well, they can't get that guy, and I don't know what the specific. But yeah, that's kind of one of their big things. They were talking on Famitsu that they're going to announce the last of the Legend of Heroes games here in the near future, in the next year or so. So they got a definite end for that whole. So yeah, there you go. There's your announcements. Yeah, let's get to some industry news. Pokemon Pocopia seems to have done really well.
Yeah, it actually has.
Sold 2.2 million copies in 4 days. Pretty good for a, life sim kind of game. But $70, a lot
Yeah.
more expensive than the average one of those. But having that be a Pokemon game certainly makes it more likely for people to check it out, especially when you've got a lot of good word of mouth going on. So that seems to be the best thing Nintendo's got going on right now in the wake of a bunch of other weird stuff going on. So yeah, that's some good news for them. They found their new Animal Crossing, essentially. So yeah, there you go for that. Let's see. Yeah, we got some more GDC news. The IGF Awards happened, and the game that won the Seamus, Dumas McNally Grand Prize. I always thought this was Seamus, but then it realized it's not how it's actually spelled. That's the Grand Prize award. Went to Titanium, a game that I did a video for a few weeks ago. It's kind of really made the rounds, and yeah, that's a very good
This one kind of
game on that
confused me.
list.
Did that game already come out?
No,
That was
the
just weird,
IGF
like.
lets games that aren't out yet get submitted.
I see. Okay. Because I remember, like, specifically because you made that video, I was like, wait, how is this nominated? This hasn't come out yet, so who played it? But yeah, no worries.
Yeah. IGF Awards are pretty loose on that kind of stuff. I forget what game won it, but yeah, they had a number of games win awards here. Titanium Court also won Excellence in Design. That's it for those two. But Horses won the Nuovo Award, which is cool. Excellence in Narrative went to Perfect Tide, Station to Station. Baby Steps won for Excellence in Audio. Like, best student game is a game called Poco. So yeah, definitely a bunch of indie games to check out there for that. So AP Thompson, the main developer for Titanium Court, has now won this award tw 2 years in a row. He was one of the two main devs on what was the game that was last year. But yeah, he worked on one of the games from last year. But yeah, this Kinsumi, he was one of the two main devs on that. So he was like, I'm just gonna repeat what I said last year, which is calling out the Trump administration for their cruelty, not only to immigrants and trans people, as well as their cruelty abroad, out in the Middle East and all that's been going on. So it was a nice message to see. So yeah, there you go for that. We got some Nintendo news here. All right, go
Real
ahead.
quick, since we're on Nintendo news, I wanted to rewind a little bit to Pokemon Pocopia, away from my desk for a little bit. So, the thing about Pocopia selling 2.2 million copies in 4 days, that's a really big deal because, again, the Switch 2 like just came out less than a year ago. There are about like 17 million of those in the wild right now, and considering that they've already sold like 12% of the Switch 2's population, it's pretty crazy considering that. I don't know if this includes both digital and physical sales, but as a lot of us know, the physical sale or the physical version isn't even really an actual physical version. You know, as the story says, it is a game key card. And this is actually one of the reasons why I did not get the game. I'm somebody that, you know, is not going to buy a game key card. Luckily, you know, I was lucky enough to have a friend of a friend get it for me. I haven't played it yet, but you know, it is what it is. But yeah, it's really interesting seeing how this has it hasn't really changed the narrative, but it also made things, you know, well worth talking about. Like, you know, it's one thing to have the game key card thing and then, you know, go ahead and really rely on that, but at the same time it's like, okay, wow, the game is good. So like that kind of like pushes you the other way. So it's gonna be interesting seeing what Nintendo does from here on out, because I believe this is the first like Nintendo published game to actually be a game key card, and this definitely would have sold as a regular card. So it's gonna be interesting to see. But yeah, like that's my two cents there, you know. Congrats to Nintendo and Pokemon Company for getting that done. But at the same time, it's also just a blow to people to who really wanted to keep things.
But yeah, the other Nintendo news of the week is that the director of WarioWare, and I believe for most of the games in that series, Goro Abe, has left Nintendo. As of the end of February, he tweeted out saying, "I retired from Nintendo at the end of February. From April, I'll be working as a professor at Osaka Electro Communication University. I'll be affiliated with the newly established Game and Social Design Department. I plan to work on game-related research and development, so I hope to be able to interact with a wider range of people than ever before." So yeah, his final directorial, which was released a couple years ago. But yeah, made a big mark on Nintendo, making, I would say, maybe one of their best, especially with the original WarioWare. That is just one of the best games of all time.
Oh,
So
yeah.
yeah, sad to see him go, but he's seemingly going to help teach and train the next generation of game designers. Cool.
Yeah, like nobody thinks of WarioWare as like, you know, an S-tier series for Nintendo, but at the same time, they've consistently come out with really great titles. And the best thing about it is that they're mostly micro games, which means you can just go ahead and play them for 15 minutes and go ahead and be done that day and continue to do so. So hopefully we see more of that out of the people. But at the same time, it's this is not a retirement, so obviously he's going to be working some more. So hopefully he does some good things.
So yeah, hopefully he enjoys teaching life there.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, there you go for that. And next up, another industry legend, Shinji Mikami, has announced he's formed a new studio called Unbound. There'll be a fully independent company, PS5, Xbox, and PC games, unsurprising. They have about 50 people already, hoping to staff up to with one of those people being a longtime collaborator, Masato Kimura, who worked on Resident Evil and Devil May Cry's games with him. Yeah, that'll be something we'll see, something new from him in a handful of years. Doing now after leaving Tango Gameworks, almost 3 years. There you go. Yeah, more Capcom related news. Mega Man Dual Override will no longer have the longtime Mega Man voice actor Ben Diskin as the voice of Mega Man, because it seems like they are going non-union for this game. Did not offer him a union contract, a SAG-AFTRA union contract, as he put out there on his social, saying, "With a broken Blue Bomber heart, I am no longer the voice of Mega Man. I was asked to return for Mega Man Dual Override, but only on the condition I work without the protections of a union contract." He went on to clarify that Capcom offered full AI protections and assured him that his voice would never be used for AI-generated content, but said that wasn't enough for him. I was saying the video game industry is facing record layoffs and a huge amount of uncertainty. I need a union contract to feel safe. So I guess as part of this, SAG-AFTRA sort of declared this a, but they basically say nobody in the union should be working on this game. Avoided at all costs for that. So good work, Capcom.
Yeah, seriously.
Just some rough news for a game that needs all the good news they need. Can. There you go.
And the thing is, this is not unheard of for Capcom. They've been doing stuff like this for a long time. It's one of the reasons why, for the longest time, the voice acting for the Resident Evil games was just so terrible.
Yeah, but also good in how terrible they are. This for like the Legends games. Let's see, we got some Valve news. They got sued by the New York Attorney General, Letitia James, over gambling concerns for loot boxes in Counter-Strike 2, Dota 2, and Team Fortress 2, that they say unlawfully encourages minors to gamble. I know this is Valve. Put out a big statement where they essentially likened the crates, the loot boxes, and all that to baseball cards and that kind of stuff, which is a really tired comparison to be making about that. Yeah, which is like they say, or we shared with the New York AG that these type of boxes in our games are widely used, not just in video games, but in the tangible world as well, where generations have grown up opening baseball card packs and blind boxes and bags, and then trading and selling the items they receive. On the physical side, popular products used in this way include baseball cards, Pokemon, Magic the Gathering, and Labubu. Game space, digital card packs, or digital packs similar to our boxes date back to 2004, and our players don't have to open mystery boxes to play Valve games. In fact, most of you don't open any boxes at all. Just play the games. Because the items in boxes are purely cosmetic, there's no disadvantage to a player not spending money. Spent efforts for many years to shut down accounts found to be linked sites and all this, which is like, this isn't really much of a counter to any of this. Yeah, like they say here, we have serious concerns with many of the alterations the New York AG claims are necessary to make. First, they seem to believe boxes and their content should not be transferable. They appear to assume digital mystery boxes and items in our games are different from tangible items like baseball card packs, which contain random cards. And they take issue with the fact that users have the ability to transfer the items they receive for user sales on the community markets, which, like, part of it is that you could essentially open these loot crates and sell things to buy physical merchandise that then you can sell for real world money, which is kind of one of the things that is a sign of you can use that to buy, a Steam Deck or physical things they sell there, and then sell that on the cheap to get some money out of it. Like, yeah, that's definitely a legit thing. But then the part where it's like they're actually saying reasonable things here is like, the New York AG also proposed to gather additional information beyond what we normally collect in the course of processing payments about each game user on the off chance someone in New York was anonymizing their location to appear outside of New York, such as by a VPN. This would have involved implementing invasive technologies for every user worldwide. Similarly, the New York AG demanded that Valve collect more personal data about our users, do additional age verification. Even though most payment methods used by New York Steam users already have age verification built in, Valve knows our users care about security of their personal information, and we believe it's in our and their best interest to only collect the information necessary to operate the business and comply with law. I believe they either have or will be passing some sort of age verification law for internet storefronts in New York, and that Valve would need to deal with, much like has been going on in various states, create what is more of a, let's say, a flawed system that's creates more weaknesses in security of information for people.
Yeah.
Discord would be using a third party to verify information, to verify you are, you know, 18 years, use the full range of things that Discord offers, more of a vulnerability than supposed protecting the kids excuse that gets used for this stuff. So yeah, and that's also part where, let's see, in addition, although this case is about mystery boxes, we feel the need to address comments made by the NYAG about games, real world violence, and children. Those extraneous comments are distraction and a mischaracterization we've all heard before. Numerous studies throughout the years have concluded there's no link between media, movies, TV, books, comics, music, and games, and real world violence. Many studies highlight the beneficial impact of games to users. Then they end here. Ultimately, a court will decide whose position, ours or NYAG's, is correct. In the meantime, we want to make sure you are aware of the potential impact either half of that. Talking about the loot crates is, like, not very convincing.
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of old arguments that companies have made for continuing to offer them. But then the parts where New York wants more age verification stuff, even though, you know, by using credit cards and such, verification that way. But yeah, a lot of stuff. Some good, some bad. But yeah, we'll have to see how this lawsuit ends up playing. There you go. I don't know if you have anything to add, Brandon.
Obviously, the loot crate stuff is the same excuse that a bunch of developers and publishers have been giving for years now. The other thing about, you know, violence and the influence, we've been through that debate already. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that. And then, we'll end on EA here, because they decided to celebrate the success of Battlefield 6 by laying off a bunch of people that worked on it.
Yep.
Particularly from four of the studios that have worked on it: Criterion in the UK, DICE in Sweden, Ripple Effect in California, and Motive in Canada. Employees are being told the layoffs are part of a realignment.
Mm-hmm.
The studios will remain operational. So yeah, that means as they move to support the game in its post-launch state, there are probably people they deem redundant,
mm-hmm,
to keep for the time being, but would hire up for a new game, I guess. But as happens with a lot of big game releases, they lay off people afterwards to trim down. But for a game that ended up being one of the most successful games of last year, it's not a great feeling to, you know, finally beaten Call of Duty in sales for a year and then lay off people not that long afterwards as they start to get their foot in their post-launch support, especially as they're about to be acquired by the Saudi's public investment fund later this year.
Yeah.
So yeah, there you go. More fun. New
yeah.
Dad, Brandon.
Nope. Just, it's EA. It's what they do.
Yeah, it's just another unfortunate instance. You know, obviously, Battlefield, for all intents and purposes, was good this year. Both critically. Yeah. Layoffs anyway. You know, I've talked to a handful of people at GDC, and they're already all at edge. You know, it's not just Battlefield, it's not just Respawn, it's not just everything happening with the Saudi Arabian purchase. Everybody is on edge. Like, there is nobody who feels safe in the industry at all, no matter what you're in, because every single AAA company has done this, except for Nintendo and Capcom, and that's why if you talk to either of those two companies, they're good. But otherwise, it's just I don't know where we go. I don't know if and how it'll get better. and all we can do is hope for the best. Like, again, I've said this many times already. Like, the answer isn't automatically go indie, because the indies are struggling too. Making games is hard. Like, for example, Mina the Hollower. If Mina the Hollower doesn't hit, and let's be honest, like, I think we all agree that it's gonna hit. If it
Oh
doesn't
yeah. Oh
hit,
yeah.
it's gonna sink Yacht Club. So, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go for your bad news of the week. But yeah, I think that's gonna do it for the show this week. Thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and things to talk about. As the weather decides it doesn't want to be warm or cold. It wants to be both. For us, it's hit the mid-70s today.
Yep.
So we're gonna be up and down. But yeah, we got a bunch of stuff coming out this week. I was just looking here. The Seven Deadly Sins Origin is out tomorrow. Starship
Yep.
Troopers Ultimate Bug War. The 17th, Dread Delusion is out on consoles. That's a game that might be up your alley, Brandon. It came out on Steam a couple years ago. It's
Yeah. What was it?
Dread Delusion. I've seen people liking it too. One of the old Elder Scrolls kind of games. With maybe more of a PS1 aesthetic to it. MLB The Show 26 is on the 17th. Thomas and Friends: Wonders of Sodor. The Coin Games on the 19th. Crimson Desert. I've seen people write that down as Crimson Dessert, and I'm like, no, that's something different. That's some Red Velvet. Death Stranding 2 on the beach is out on PC. Dragonkin the Banished. Rushing Beat X, The Return of Brawl Brothers, Ghostmaster Resurrection on the 20th. So yeah, a bunch of stuff coming out this week. So yeah, if you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know. They should check it out and select strangers who are also excited about a bunch of games coming. So yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.
See you.